Some years ago, a friend of mine was going through a very difficult time. Her primary relationship was troubled. She had financial and medical worries, and a close family member was seriously depressed. Yet in the midst of all of this, my friend, who is of a religious bent of mine, was able to say, "I feel as if I'm living in a state of grace." Somehow, amid all of the turmoil, instead of feeling as though she were sinking, she experienced herself as being buoyed up. She felt that she was being given the strength to cope. It was as if some cosmic mother was holding her, rocking her in supportive arms. A good deal has been written by theologians and poets throughout the centuries about the experience of the grace of God. Grace has been variously described as a gift of insight that leads to spiritual growth, as a feeling of transcendence, a feeling of wonder, an experience of or glimpse of the divine dimension in existence, as a sense of being somehow especially blessed with special talents or good fortune, as an ability to enjoy and appreciate the beauty of the world, and as a feeling of new strength, a rebirth after or even in the midst of a difficult time. Liberal Christian theologian Paul Tillich speaks of the times when one is likely to receive grace as a gift and the feeling of buoyancy that it can bestow upon a troubled soul. Here are Tillich's words on grace from the sermon titled, "You Are Accepted." Really a very motherly sermon title when you think about it. You are accepted. Grace strikes us when we are in great pain and restlessness. It strikes us when we walk through the dark valley of a meaningless and empty life. It strikes us when we feel that our separation is deeper than usual because we have violated another life, a life which we loved, or from which we were estranged. It strikes us when our disgust for our own being, our indifference, our weakness, our hostility, and our lack of direction and composure have become intolerable to us. It strikes us when, year after year, the longed-for perfection of life does not appear. When the old compulsions reign within us, as they have for decades. When despair destroys all joy and courage. Sometimes, at that moment, a wave of light breaks through our darkness. And it is as though a voice were saying, "You are accepted." If that happens to us, we experience grace. After such an experience, we may not be better than before, and we may not believe more than before, but everything is transformed. Grace comes, as Tillich says, when life seems empty and meaningless, when we are in despair or confused or worried or tired of the old routines and troublesome feelings. Grace gives an impression of profound acceptance. According to Tillich, grace is a resounding sense from the cosmos that exclaims, "You are accepted." It seems to me that grace, as he speaks of it, is like the lullaby of the cosmos as mother, a mother who cuddles and rocks her troubled creatures. The idea of grace as a gift from heaven goes back before Christianity. In ancient Greece, grace, or in Greek, charis, was seen as the special favor of the gods bestowed upon humans. In the story of the Odyssey, Nausicaa, the king's daughter, was picnicking and sunbathing by the ocean with her maidservants when they caught a glimpse of Odysseus on the beach. He was waking from a long sleep after his tempestuous journey. He emerged from the sand, dirty, naked, hairy, and trembling. He made a gruesome sight, wrote Homer, and the king's daughter and her maidservants ran off screaming with fright. But the goddess Athena, who had been watching over Odysseus, and who knew that he needed help from the king's daughter to reach Ithaca, bestowed charis, grace, on Odysseus. Athena first stopped his limbs from trembling, then she endowed him with a gift of beauty and charm. Upon seeing him thus blessed by grace, by the grace of the goddess, the king's daughter says, "When we first met, I thought he cut a sorry figure. But now he looks like the gods who live in heaven." So because of the ministrations, the motherly concern of Athena, Odysseus enters a state of grace and becomes radiant. From ancient Greece, we also get the three graces personified as a triple goddess figure who bestows beauty, kindness, motherly love, sensual delight, joy, and compassion upon both mortals and gods. The ancient Roman word for grace was caritas, usually translated as charity or as love. But they also used the word venia to mean grace. Venia derives from the goddess Venus, who both embodied grace herself in the sense of beauty and charm, and who bestowed grace upon mortals at her whim. In Hinduism, the equivalent word for the idea of grace is karuna, a gift of insight given by gods or goddesses. In the Bhagavad Gita, the god Krishna bestows his grace on the confused and despairing mortal Arjuna and opens Arjuna's eyes to the divine. In the Christian tradition, grace refers to a favor given by God. St. Paul said, "Grace is not your doing. It is the gift of God." We've all heard the expression, "There but for the grace of God go I." This common phrase most likely originated with the 16th century English martyr John Bradford, who said, as he saw people being led to the gallows, "But for the grace of God, there goes John Bradford." That phrase is a way of saying that the unlucky ones and I are equal, but for some reason, or perhaps no reason at all, grace saved me from the same fate. This unmerited quality to the gift of grace actually makes God, or the goddess, seem rather capricious. Why does one person get blessed with grace while the other is led to the gallows? Why did my friend feel herself to be in a state of grace in the midst of her pain, while another afflicted person might sink in despair and hopelessness? Theologians throughout the ages have wrestled with that classic question. Some have concluded that God grants grace only to a few, to the elect, while others are predestined to fall from grace into sin. Well, this doctrine has historically been and is unpalatable to Unitarians and Universalists. Some modern theologians have settled on the notion that grace actually abounds in the world, but we have to be open to receiving the grace of the world, or even recognizing it as the gift that it is. The philosopher Aldous Huxley once wrote a meditation on grace, in which he said, "In the overwhelming majority of cases, the gifts of help are so inconspicuously woven into the texture of common life that we do not know that these are graces. If we do not respond," he continued, "to these ordinary graces as we ought to, we shall receive no benefit and remain unaware of their nature or even their very existence." Huxley is saying that this gift of grace, this gift of help, sustenance, renewal, or joy is really a part of the ordinary world. Grace surrounds us if we are awake to it. Whether we call them grace or not, most of us would acknowledge that there are many gifts embedded in this life. Gifts of love, of beauty, of harmony, gifts of opportunity, the opportunity for transformation or renewal, gifts of inner strength that somehow get us through difficult times. We might also agree with Huxley that sometimes we are prone to closing our eyes and turning from this giftedness that life offers us, forgetting that there is so much in the world that can help us, that can heal us, and give us surprises of joy, provided that we are open and receptive. Here is a beautiful little poem about being actively receptive to the grace of the world, a poem by Wendell Berry. "When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things, who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of the still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free." You need not believe in a personal divinity who dispenses grace like candy to accept an experience of this grace of the world. Whether we are theologically inclined or not, I believe that we all have at least an inkling of being blessed from time to time with grace or with life's ongoing gifts. Grace is embedded in our psyches. It is the memory of a smiling mother or father or caregiver. No matter how we think that our parents may have screwed us up, and these days we tend to look upon our families of origin as the locus of our subsequent problems and dysfunctions. No matter how we may wish our parents had nurtured us differently, the fact that we are here at all is because somebody cared. Somebody gave us the gift of life, and somebody nurtured us through childhood. Our first experience of grace as infants was the primal grace of a nurturer when we ourselves were helpless. Later, when we fell and got hurt and cried and were cuddled and kissed back to smiles, we received a gift of grace that was indelibly impressed upon our minds, whether we consciously remember it or not. I say to you on this Mother's Day that in a very real sense, grace is our mother. The trick of perspective that we need to learn once we are grown and on our own is how to receive life itself as a grace, as the gift that it is, and how to receive even those inevitable dark times in our lives as teachers to further our growth, and even perhaps as gifts themselves. Grace comes when we are open and alert. Grace is being cradled in the sensual beauty of life. Grace is being rocked in the arms of the cosmic mother. Grace is the feeling of acceptance, healing, power, liberation, understanding, transformation, and rebirth that comes as a gift, sometimes after long labor, sometimes in the midst of turmoil and trouble. So on this Mother's Day, I wish for you an openness, a receptiveness to the ever-present miracle of creation, to the grace, to the many graces of the world. I close with the words of the ancient sage of China, Lao Tse. The breath of life moves through a deathless valley of mysterious motherhood, which conceives and bears the universal seed. Breath for us to draw on as we will. And the more we take of it,